You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello and welcome to the William Hill Racing Podcast. Alex Dunn and Rory DeLaghi are with you on this edition. Bit of deja vu if you listen to the podcast every day, because I think I'm right saying, Rory, this was exactly the scenario last week.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Yeah.
Looking at average racing, but looking ahead to fantastic racing.
Yeah, I mean, we could do this 6 months a year, really, couldn't we?
Yeah.
Starting late October and look forward to the Cheltenham Festival every week.
I say average racing, that is being disrespectful to Exeter, Newcastle and Suddle, although it's not untrue. That is coming up on Tuesday, and we'll get to four contests, two at Exeter, one at Newcastle and one at Suddle, a little bit later on. But Tuesday's racing podcast here at William Hill means we steal a feature from the Racing Post called the Monday Jury. Now, again, if you listened last week, you will see that a few of the questions are a bit similar this week. But if we're going over old ground, do excuse us. But put it this way. This time next week, Rory, we will be cock-a-hoop, won't we?
I thought you were going to say millionaires there.
Well, that'd be nice as well.
Would be nice.
And that would be cause to be cock-a-hoop.
Absolutely, yeah.
But no, because of course this time next week, I will be making my way down to Cheltenham. You will already be down there, I'd imagine. And everyone will be ruddy excited. And rightly so.
Yeah, it's as I said last week, you know, there's a bit too much talk about Cheltenham through the year when we should be enjoying the racing that's going on at the time. But in the last 2 or 3 weeks beforehand, with the day-to-day racing being fairly ordinary and more information coming to hand about Cheltenham, the final entries, for example, only came in last week on Wednesday. So it becomes more forgivable.
Yes.
To look forward.
It does. So, Monday Jury, first question. With the weights out, what is your handicap pick at Cheltenham?
If we're looking at one horse, I'll throw one in the mix. So I need to dig out my entries here. But in the Ultima on the opening day, mm-hmm. I'm very interested in Henry Parry Morgan, who's a, I don't know if you can dig your prices up there.
I'll find a price for
he's
you.
He's as big as 20s.
Okay.
In a place or two, or he was when I looked a couple of days ago. And even non-runner no bet at that. But I think he's an intended runner. He's a horse who was second to Black Lion in the big Grade 1 novice chase at Aintree last April. He then started favourite for the Bet365 Gold Cup at Sandown and unseated. And his jumping's let him down once or twice since, although it's not like he blunders his way around. And he had a confidence booster over fences at Exeter last time out, where I thought the sole purpose was just to give him confidence. Mm. He finished second that day, but never got heavily involved. That was the race that Lizzie Kelly won on the horse she's going to ride in the Gold Cup, T for 3.
Mm.
And
T for 2, rather.
Mm. T for 3 being an entirely different beast. But he didn't. The form of that isn't particularly good.
Uh-huh.
But as I said, I didn't think his run there was about being as competitive as possible. It was just trying to give him confidence. And it should have worked in that he jumped around safely, didn't make any mistakes. And the handicapper's given him a massive chance. When you consider all the talk about handicappers here, a lot of horses coming in theoretically under the radar, but being hit quite hard by the handicapper. He's a horse who's actually, given that he's a second season chaser and should still be on the up, he's been given a real chance by being dropped from the end of last season, and things haven't really been in his favour. You know, he's been running in races like the Hennessy. He then ran in the Cleve Hurdle, I think, at Cheltenham,
mm.
again, with a view of protecting his mark. He's pretty much guaranteed a run. I think he's off 1-4-2, and that strikes me as being a very, very feasible mark for a horse of his ability. Second in a Grade 1 only a few months ago, essentially. And probably been lined up for this. So at that price, I thought he was very interesting.
He's 20-1 with us here at William Hill as well. If you are having a bet on the Ultima Handicap Chase, Noble Endeavour's the 8-1 favourite. 10s then for Champers on Ice, Maldini, Single Farm Payment and the Druid's Nephew. And bigger prices the rest of, which there are so many, but that is because it's a handicap.
And, those at the head of the market are interesting enough, but of course they've been, you know, they're fairly, I was going to say well exposed. That's not what I mean. Generally speaking, they're unexposed, but people have had their eye on horses like this for a long time. So Champers on Ice, whose jumping's been a bit iffy thus far.
Yeah.
You know, he was tailed off after about three fences at Cheltenham last time out before staying on very late behind beaten horses. He doesn't have anything like the chance of the selection on form, but everyone expects him to improve a stone for stepping up at the festival. It's not always the way, really.
No.
It helps to have form in the book there. And
It can be the way, but at the same time, if you're going to take such a short price on in such a competitive race, you have to know that...
Everyone thinks they're getting value backing horses like Champers on Ice because of the improvement there, but of course, you're getting half the price for a horse that hasn't proven it and needs to sort his jumping out, essentially. So while I respect him, mine's a much bigger price and is on a fairer handicap mark as well.
Okay, and don't forget we are non-runner insurance here at William Hill on all Cheltenham Festival races, so if for any reason Henry Parry Morgan wasn't to turn up there, then you'd be okay, you'd be covered. Second question on the Monday jury, has the British handicapper been fair to Irish-trained horses? A bit of a blanket statement. Can you give a non-specific answer?
Yeah, well, there's been a lot of nonsense talked about this. More about the Grand National than anything else. You know, the Michael and Eddie O'Leary blow-up over the national weights. There are a lot of uneducated comments made there. There are issues there in that while the British handicapper keeps a record of all Irish horses, I say all Irish horses, we're almost certainly looking at Irish horses over a certain level, so horses who are capable of running in big handicaps in the UK.
Yep.
Otherwise, you'd have a hell of a lot of work on your hands. They keep marks for those horses, but they don't publish them. And the reason they don't publish them is that they produce basic performance ratings for the horses. They don't go around working out whether horses are tons in hand or whether this is a quiet run and that kind of thing, and whether they'd want to give a horse another £2 on top of it.
Take everything at face value.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But if those horses are entered up for handicaps, then they will revisit the mark and decide whether they want to do anything with it. And that is what people object to, essentially, that... You have this mark in theory, it doesn't get published, and if you enter for handicap, you don't know whether that mark then gets inflated by a few pounds afterwards because you happen to look particularly interesting, your shrewd connections, or you've been well backed for the race. And I would prefer if those marks were in the public domain all the time. And if that means employing more people to do it, because the Phil Smith's argument would be, although he's always getting asked the wrong questions about this, his argument would be we don't have the manpower to keep those ratings and publish them. It would just take too much time. He says it takes 18 hours a week anyway, and that's work that they shouldn't be doing because they should just be keeping their own ratings and trusting the Irish handicapper to do his thing, which is, in a backhanded way, an insult to the Irish handicapping team because they don't just say we're working on different scales here. They used to have a sliding scale, deciding that one jurisdiction was slightly inflated compared to the other, and therefore they would.
But why?
Well, because it's all notional. It's all theoretical, isn't it?
It is opinion almost.
Well, that's the thing about the way horses are handicapped in the UK, according to the BHA, is they use what's called yardstick handicapping.
Uh-huh.
So you're always working out the ratings for an individual race through a horse who's run before, using that as a guide, as a yardstick. That means that if you're overestimating your yardstick in the first place, you're overestimating everything else according to that. And you never find out if you're wrong until months down the line.
Yeah.
Because as long as these horses are running to the correct figures among their own population, then everything seems hunky-dory.
Yeah.
If they're all, you know, by definition, if we keep punishing horses for winning, then the population as a whole increases in rating, and the ratings are gradually going up over a period of time, which means there have been occasions when they've all had to be pulled down by £10 to set things straight again. That's a natural thing when you handicap in that manner. And obviously, if you have a harsher way of doing it in one jurisdiction, again, the Irish handicapper might put up a horse £5 for winning by five lengths. The UK handicapper will say, that's won five lengths without being all out. He's up £10. Then you end up with a scale that's not in sync.
It happens two or three times, and then all of a sudden you've got a horse that is potentially a stone well in.
Exactly.
And that's why we are trying, well, I say we, but that is why the aim of this is not to, for want of a better phrase, screw one side over or the other. We're trying to look for a level playing field. It is difficult. I don't envy their job by any
means. No, it's tough, but there should be a team There's so much crossover in domestic racing between the UK and Ireland that there should be. There is a forum at the end of the season, the Anglo-Irish classifications, but you actually need to have a team overall looking at that on a regular basis, and maybe four times a year, six times a year, once a month, whatever it happens to be, get together and agree their figures, certainly above a certain rating. The Anglo-Irish classifications look at horses rated 140 plus, which is fair enough, and then obviously those who fall below that will fall into line. But the handicapper is not being specifically unfair to Irish horses, although there'll be individual cases where his interpretation will look very harsh. Rashan was a great example in the Betfair Hurdle. That horse has run very close to the same level of form since. Presenting Percy, who was rated 130 in Ireland, to the extent that Connections, Pat Kelly, who trains him, ran him again before the festival, even though he's qualified for his target, because he thought he wouldn't get in. He wouldn't qualify for one of the handicaps because of being rated too low. So he won a handicap a week ago, last Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah.
And he went up £16, essentially. Well, £10 by the Irish handicapper, and then a further £6 on top of that when the UK handicapper looked at it. So that looks very harsh on paper. We didn't find out how harsh it is unless they actually run it in the Thames final.
But it may not be harsh.
He's favourite for that race.
Yeah.
But of course, that's an argument. He's certainly a favourite in places for that race. The argument that Phil Smith has put forward on occasion with Don Pauly in the Grand National, for example, is like, well, I see he's favourite for the race. And Michael O'Leary was not particularly pleased that you would base your handicapping on what the betting says.
Yes.
Which I don't think Phil was doing that.
No.
I think he was using it as an example. They couldn't be too far wrong. But you end up with this sort of circular argument and everyone gets a bit hot under the collar.
I just think handicapping itself is, to an extent, opinion, as are people's views on it as well.
Yeah.
It is. We could go around in circles for days, couldn't we?
We could.
Talking about it, but we won't, don't worry. We'll move on to question number three. Who do you fancy for the RSA chase with Coney Island out of the picture? Mike Bite is the 5-2 favourite with us here at William Hill. This is as of 1:30, by the way, on Monday afternoon. Alpha Dezobo, 6-1, 8-1 for Bells Hill and Whisper, 9-1 American, Acapella Bourgeois, 10s with Disco and Bigger Prices the rest.
What price are you? I'm going to dig out a horse who's not even being aimed at the race.
Right.
Who you should have in there somewhere. A genie in a bottle.
25s.
That is, it's £25 stake. You get your money back if he ends up in a different race, don't you? Worth having 25 quid in there at 25-1.
Okay.
He's favourite for the National Hunt Chase on Tuesday. I think he's good enough in what looks a difficult RSA to go close. He'd certainly be a lot shorter than 25-1 if he turned up. And you've got to bear that in mind. If you're getting your stake back for not turning up and you're backing horses here, you've got to work out what price they should be if they ran. If he ran, he'd be 7-1, I'd say.
Okay.
Around that kind of price, 7 or 8-1. It depends what happens with other horses, including those in the same ownership. Alpha Dezobo, for example, runs in the same colours, and he'd be the obvious one for this race. The interesting thing about him is that he comes from a yard. He was disappointing last time I broke a blood vessel. Comes from a yard who couldn't buy a winner for months, and have now had three in the last couple of racing days. That's Mouse Morris.
Yep.
So Alpha Dezobo is really interesting. The race revolves around Might Bite. The issue with him is whether he will handle Cheltenham, because he's never been here before.
He's a very extravagant jumper as well.
And obviously he came down at Kempton when asked a big question at the last in a race that he would have won very easily.
Yeah.
And that piece of form is easily the best on offer. But he didn't prove an awful lot when he won what was essentially a two-runner race at Doncaster next time out, which was there to get his confidence back. If he handles Cheltenham, then he's got a great chance. Mm. The other issue with him, even if Cheltenham isn't a problem, and for a horse who's only raced on flat tracks and has taken a heavy fall, that has to be a worry, is that half the field, half of the fancied runners are out-and-out front runners.
Mm.
And there'll be no hiding place for Mike Bite. He could end up getting caught up in a real duel. And that's a little bit off-putting for his price as well.
That could really scupper. I mean, you mentioned Mike Bite. You've got Acapella Bourgeois, American, who've been very impressive from the front. But at the same time, their whole chance could be scuppered very early on if they can't get to the front, or likewise.
Well, any of the three. I mean, Acapella Bourgeois, he's stolen a massive lead last time out, and that seems to be the key to him.
Yeah.
The grind obviously is going to make a difference as well. But if it turns out that you've got three or four horses intent on making the running, then it's set up for a strong stayer who jumps well in behind. And a genie in a bottle would fit that bill if he turned up. As I said, he looks very unlikely to turn up. If you're looking at his prices overall,
yeah.
The suggestion is he's going to go for the four-miler. But it's one of those that if he happens to sparkle...
Yep.
Between now and then, and Alpha Des Obo, for example, doesn't.
It's not or they just of, think is it?
They have. The Jigginstein team have often made their intentions very clear and then changed their minds.
Yep.
Late in the day, and it's worth looking at those non-runner no bet markets.
I will just say, although you are trying to manipulate the system there.
Yeah, absolutely.
The RSA Chase obviously is the day after the National Hunt Chase, so if you were to get your free bet back, I would imagine you wouldn't get it back until the Wednesday, meaning that you couldn't. Use the free bet on Tuesday.
No, you couldn't.
But you could use it elsewhere on the festival.
Yeah, the question there is you know, how much of a bank you set aside.
Yeah, that is true.
And of course, it's quite good bank management. Rather than getting a scenario where you lose everything on the first day, which is very hard to do these days, it has to be said. You're getting bits and pieces back at the very least through the week. So I'll be looking at a few of those.
Certainly interesting. Question number four: who or what is going to surprise us at the festival?
That seems remarkably similar to another question in there.
But it's also very vague. But
it is
who or what the weather? I don't know. It could be anything. The ground.
The ground could surprise us. We don't really know.
Well, let's just look at the answers that we've got. We've got Harry Fry, Nicky Henderson. That wouldn't be the biggest shock. Jack Kennedy. That Rock on the Moor.
Oh, for goodness, yes. Woody Mullins might not be champion trainer. I mean, that's, you know, that if that's the biggest shock of the festival, then, there you go.
Have you got anything? Mm-mm.
Yeah, I fancy a few at prices, but obviously I've thrown a 21 shot up there already.
Yeah.
I guess it wouldn't be a horse running in a handicap that you're looking at.
Why
you're
don't
looking
we tie
at
it
the championship
to,
race?
To question number six then.
Yeah.
Who is the most underrated horse going into the festival? We'll sort of tie those two together.
Who's the most underrated? Apple's Jade.
Okay.
She's a possibility. I'd quite like to see her rock up in the champion hurdle at the last minute. She's in there. Everyone assumes she's not going to run. But she does blossom at this time of the year, and although she was beaten by Limini last time out, she's been completely forgotten now for the champion hurdle. She's 33s. Again, same scenario there, but it's very unlikely. She looks like she's going to go for the mare's hurdle, but I still like her, and I would back her for next year's champion.
Okay.
I've got no problem with the trip if you stay that little bit further. Her issue is that she's a 5-year-old mare against older horses, and it's been very difficult for horses of that age in the champion hurdle anyway, and for her being a mare as well, it makes it doubly difficult, whereas next season she could really take off. But that's a different kettle of fish altogether.
Yep.
What else do I like at a big price? A horse called Scormar in the Coral Cup. Not guaranteed to get in. He's sort of on the cusp of where the cutoff will be. He finished a length or so second to the favourite for the race two starts ago and has waited to take his revenge. He then should have won at Cork on his next start, which looks even better for him. On my figures, he's a better horse than Automated, who's favourite for the race. Although Automated could clearly find that improvement as well.
20-1, if you fancy it.
Yeah, that's a big price for Tom Mullins' horse. He looks well handicapped. And he's a big price because of where he sits in the weights, not because of anything else. No one's actually looked at him yet. If he snuck into the race and people look at the form line, they go, how's this twice the price?
Yeah.
But again, if you get balloted out, you get your money back anyway.
Yeah.
So that's not a concern. So I quite like his chances.
Just a bit of admin, if you like. Again, as we're recording this at 20-2 on the Monday, Neon Wolf, very well supported today, has pretty much halved in prices now, 4-1 for the Supreme, first race of the whole festival, and you'd imagine that is because connections have decided to go there.
So Harry Fry interviewed yesterday. He said he was still favouring the Neptune, but they said if it was genuinely very soft, then they would switch to the Supreme. But
there has been a lot of support behind it just today, and we're going to have this all the way up to the festival.
Yeah, we had a lot of this last year, and it turns out, some of it turns out to be inspired, and some of it turns out to be...
So watch the space.
A lot of old nonsense.
But do take advantage of the non-runner insurance. It really can't
hurt. But by all means, look at those races and ask yourself the question about what would happen if X turned up. And again, I'm banging the same drum with various horses here. There are certain races like the Champion Chase, which is all one-way traffic.
Yeah.
With Duvan, you can back Undersold about 8-1, something like that. Yeah, He only turns up in the champion if, God forbid, something happens to Doohan. If he does turn up, he's favourite. And probably even money favourite.
Okay.
So you're getting 8-1 about a massively likely non-runner. But if he runs, there's no way Altior runs, in my opinion. Even if Doohan comes out, I don't think they'll run Altior. For me, Undersoul would be favourite. Even if Altior and Undersoul ran against each other, they'd be close in the betting. And yet one's 9-4 and one's 8-1.
Yeah.
And that's wrong.
I see that
from him. And because people don't like getting involved in these markets, because you're tying your money up and you're probably only getting it back, there's no volatility in the market. So whereas there's definitely prices that are wrong, but it's all...
No, that's a fair
It's an
point,
academic process for most of the year, but when you get closer to it...
I see that.
But again, with all those championship races, just ask yourself the question... In what scenario might this horse run?
Yeah.
Might this run? And when it's a Willie Mullins horse, it will only run if the favourite comes out. Suddenly, you've got a completely different betting market.
How many times has that happened so far?
Well, exactly.
Before this festival?
We've seen it a couple of times last year, so worth bringing them out.
Okay, final question. Give us a four-timer without Altior or Doohan.
Who tries to get a four-timer at the festival? You know what I mean, Harry, is as solid as anything in the stairs.
Yep.
I can't get used to saying stairs again. I mean, I spent 20 years saying it.
Now
it's difficult to get back into it.
5-4 for that one.
The aforementioned A Genie in a Bottle in the National Hunt Chase looks really solid.
Yes, if going there, yes.
Yeah, and obviously what you can do is to spare your fourfold, you can have a few bob on him to win the RSA, and then if he switches, you've got that free bet going for you.
Yep.
Who else do we have?
It's tricky. This asking for a fourfold without.
Oh, I've found a completely different answer to one of the questions earlier on. Now.
Go on.
For goodness' sake.
Well, we'll come back to that.
The fourfold, a Death Judy. Again, I would happily back Death Judy for the Neptune as well.
Right.
Even though he's been confirmed for the Albert Bartlett, because he'd be nearly fit. I think he's the best novice hurdler in the British Isles,
2-1
Ireland
for the Albert Bartlett.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd happily run him in the Neptune if he was mine. And if he switches, he's a reasonable price, about 6-7-1 for that.
Yeah.
Which should be fine. But I'll stick him in for the Albert Bartlett for the sake of the bet. So I've got three now. I need one more.
Yeah.
You've got to finish in the Gold Cup, really, don't you?
Okay.
No, you don't really have to finish in the Gold Cup,
do you?
No, you
don't have to.
No.
I'm not forcing you to. Finishing in the bumper, you could go away.
I've turned full circle since last week, actually, on one horse. I'll throw it in here for the sake of it. In the Triumph... Master Blue Eyes.
Okay.
I've been looking back at his runs, and the more you see of him, the more you like him.
I think he's certainly of those, well, Defy Decide, the 2-1 market leader, and then Sixes or Bigger the Rest. He is certainly the most solid.
Yeah, and what he's doing is he's thriving in his racing and he's getting better and better. He had two issues early on. He raced freely and he made mistakes. And as each run has passed, each of those tendencies has been curbed to a degree. So he's still not absolutely perfect in that regard, but he jumped much better at Kempton. And he just seems to be getting bigger and stronger with every run as well. Mm. So, and that's the kind of horse you want, the Triumph. You don't want a very lightly raced horse that you're told is an absolute flying machine. You want something that really wants to get into a battle and won't mind the occasion. And the more you see of Master Blue Eyes, the more you like him. So I'll throw him in there.
So we've got You Know What I Mean, Harry, in the Stayers. That's 5-4. A Genie in a Bottle in the National Hunt Chase. That's 5s. Death Duty for the Albert Bartlett at 2s. And Master Blue Eyes at 8s for the Triumph. That is 363-1 as a fourfold. But let's be honest, you could put that as a lucky 15, couldn't you?
You could, yeah.
And you wouldn't be unhappy with it, provided one or two of them come in. What was the change
answer?
Yeah.
Which horse could throw up a shock?
Yeah.
Or who could provide a shock. As the betting stands in the Gold Cup at the moment, the horse you'd have to be with, and please don't tell me you've cut it to 10-1 this morning. You know, the market is very mature and it makes perfect sense, generally speaking, but there's one that stands out to me, and good old you. 20-1 is far too big of a Bristol to my.
Okay.
I did a couple of these media days, and to be honest... you often learn less than nothing. The one good thing about Nigel Twist and Davis's open day is he lets you watch the horses work, which you don't get at any of the other yards. You get a photo opportunity with whoever you fancy at Nicky Henderson's yard and Paul Nicholls' yard. But Nigel lets the horses work. So one thing we know is, although he had a setback after his last race, he came back with a twisted joint from Newbury, where he disappointed behind Native River. We know he's largely over that because he led the string in 3 canters up the all-weather. And looked in really, really good order. And if you take that at face value, that he's wrenched something early in the race and therefore has run below par, then you're going back to his win in the Peter Marsh before that sign of how good he is. And he'd be less than half that price on that basis.
So just worth a look.
Yeah, we also know, even if you didn't know about the injury, the minor injury at Newbury, we know that he's best when he's allowed to bowl along and do his own thing.
Yeah.
At least either leading or very close up. And yet he was held up last of three at Newbury, and that clearly wasn't going to get the best out of him. So he'd be ridden differently at Cheltenham. The rain hasn't really relented in the last week or so.
Not really.
So we do have a fair chance of getting softish ground. He doesn't need a bottomless, but soft ground would suit him better than some. And he's the one who's the wrong price. If he did rock up in the day at 9 or 10 to 1, which I think he will, then it'll be a different kettle of fish. But as it stands, much as I absolutely adore Q Card and really want him to win, and I also like Native River, who ran in that race, the bottom line is that Bristol Demai is the wrong price and he's far too big. So if I have to nominate something as being capable of providing a shock or the wrong price, then it has to be him.
Okay, plenty to go out there then. I will just throw one more Cheltenham bet at you, and it's part of the countdown that we have here at William Hill. We have one per day, obviously 8 days to go today at 8 to 1. Tomorrow it'll be 7 days to go, 7 to 1. So this is available until midnight on Monday night. The Arkle to have the widest winning margin at the festival, available at 8 to 1. If you do think that Altior is going to absolutely annihilate the field and win by the largest distance, that is 8 to 1. But do, if you're listening to this on Tuesday morning, that's not valid anymore. Listen to, well, don't listen, but go on,
if,
go on the specials market.
If you're listening to it on Tuesday morning, go back in time and listen to it again on Monday, and then think, hold on a second, if I can go back in time.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe I could find even better value than that.
Quite possibly. But just check them out, because some of them are genuinely very, very interesting. Right, we've got a look at some of Tuesday's racing. We're going to start at Exeter with the 220, and Exeter is, by the way, the High Five meeting at William Hill on Tuesday. This is a handicap hurdle over 3 miles, and we'll start with the two last time out winners here, Ben Arthur and Midnight Request.
Yes, Midnight Request, typical of one from Nigel Hawkshard, had been struggling a little bit for form around the turn of the year, but he took the horse up to Carlisle, where he ran out a four-length winner of a handicap hurdle of a mark of 100 under Robert Hawker, claiming 7. Robert rides again. He's up £9 for that, which makes things a lot more difficult, but he's one of the few in here coming into the race in good form, so you have to respect Midnight Request chances. But the vote will go to Ben Arthur. If Nigel Hawke's in decent form, what is Kim Bailey?
Kim Bailey has been in good form for what seems like a very long time now as well.
Well, it's probably about 3 weeks, but he's firing in huge numbers of winners. A very high percentage in handicaps, generally speaking. In the last fortnight, he's had 27 runners and 7 winners. But if you go back to the beginning of January, the horses were bang out of form.
Yep.
But Kim campaigned them really well. He's got a few horses. There was nothing seriously wrong, but the horses just weren't running to their potential. But he's managed to get a few of them enough runs to get qualified for handicaps. And those who have done well. He had two that probably would have fought out the finish of a handicap hurdle at Huntingdon yesterday, Braw Angus and 50 Bob. 50 Bob unseated his rider at the last, but Braw Angus went on to win at a decent price. And you've just got to stick with Kim, especially with horses with this kind of profile. 3 runs in which he showed very little, Ben Arthur. And then a mark of 99 for a handicap debut. He's only won narrowly, won by a short head from Steel Native. But Steel Native would have followed up next time out, but for taking a fall himself. And that form actually looks pretty decent. Get In Pat, who was 4th that day, has won since. So although the margin was fine, the form is strong. And he's gone up less in the weights than the other last time out winner. He's up £6 and he's totally unexposed. So Ben Arthur will take all the beating.
Okay. And just while we're talking about Kim Bailey, I went to Toaster for the first time ever with my girlfriend and her family a few weeks back, and saw Bandon Rock win the first race there, who's really racking up a sequence.
Yep.
And you know when you're against a horse in every single, well, not in every single way, but I didn't back the horse. I was very much against it, looking for value. Won so takingly, and yes, it's at Toaster, so this is a fairly moderate level, but a lovely big strapping type. We'll certainly be interested to see where that one ends up next. So I'll flag that one up as one to just keep an eye on for the future Bandon Rock.
Yeah, I was working. Bailey. I was working when he won the first of that sequence at Taunton in an absolutely dreadful race, and he didn't jump terribly well in the early stages, but absolutely cleared away from them. It seems typical of Kim's. They generally want a stiffish track,
Yeah.
And soft ground these days, which is odd because he used to have a stable full of fast ground horses. That's why he fell in hard times for a while, because all his horses wanted quick ground and it was heavy for about 3 years. But now his horses, a lot of them handle the ground very well and they seem very, very strong at the finish. And they're very healthy at the moment, which is hugely important.
That is true. And Bandon Rock is absolutely huge, so we'll go over fences at some point as well. Right, the 350 at Exeter is a chase. See, there was a link there, maybe. 3 miles the trip for this one, the six of them. And unlike the previous race that we looked at Exeter, there's not a whole lot of recent winning form coming to the table here.
No, these novices' limited handicap chases, you've often got horses who've got very little form over fences. And it's a funny time of year for them as well, although slightly less funny now than it was a week or so ago. If you win for the first time over hurdles or fences after the start of March, then you still retain your novice status until the start of November. If you win a novice's limited handicap chase on the 28th of February, you're not a novice a couple of months later. So it doesn't give you an awful lot of time to take advantage of that. Although if you're a handicapper in the first place, keeping a handicap company makes it a little bit easier for you.
Yeah.
Lower Hope Dandy is coming to chasing quite late in life. I thought he would make a really good chaser a couple of years ago. I saw him win a handicap hurdle at Cheltenham. It's gone back to 2014, probably. He was injured then after that. He missed more than a season. He's generally run very well. The interesting thing about him is how well he will jump, because although he looks a chaser through and through, he's made mistakes over hurdles at times. He looks a little bit clumsy. And while he ran very well at Bangor in his chase debut, he again made a bad mistake late in the day. And that seems to be the habit with him. His jumping is okay early on, but he tends to get very ragged late in his races. He's well enough handicapped at a mark of 119. He's off the same mark as he was second at Bangor. And a repetition, if you trust the Bangor form, is good enough to win this. But I wonder if he's able to repeat that form.
Okay.
You know, that would be a concern for me. Although Venetia's in reasonable form at the moment, he's looked a little bit too fragile for my liking.
And also just, how is Charlie Deutsch still claiming three?
I know. Well, it's because he was claiming seven. He's about 9 years old and he was claiming seven less than a year ago.
I really, really rate him. But obviously the winners aren't quite stacking up, if you like. That's the only reason that you can think of. You know, there are some jockeys that you go, oh, he's lost his claim already.
Yeah.
Well, this one, it's been very much the opposite.
Yeah, and he's definitely value for his £3 Charlie.
Yeah,
very good. And he's only going to improve over the next couple of years as well. He's got plenty of confidence. He's never been short of that. I saw him ride a winner at the Hunter Chase evening at Cheltenham when he only would have been 16 or 17.
Yeah.
And he's got a 100-1 shot as well.
Oh.
Horse that only showed its form when he rode it.
Did you back it?
I didn't, no. But what I was surprised by was, given it was a rank outsider, got the biggest cheer of the night when he came back in. And I thought that might have been all the young ladies cheering for
possibly
for him, which is a possibility.
So you're against Lower Hope Dandy, though?
Yeah, which you know, makes me a little bit sad, given that I put him up as a horse to follow, you know, two or three seasons ago, before I realised he'd had that injury. But he doesn't quite convince me anymore. So I'm going to go against him with a horse that needs to raise his game slightly, but conditions will be ideal for Quinto, who's the next John Quinn horse. And I've had him in mind ever since he joined Jimmy Frost, but he's not always had conditions in his favour. He's not the biggest to jump fences either, but he does have a point-to-point background. And all he does is gallop. He's not the prettiest horse to watch, but he stays very well.
He's been runner-up on ground as well. You can just imagine him slogging through.
Oh, yeah, soft and heavy for his two starts over fences. He's been runner-up at Exeter and Fontwell. He's made it look hard work both times, but both times he's looked like coming from an unpromising position to win before not quite getting there. And I think the step-up and trip, it was 2.5 miles at Fontwell last time out and quite a sharp track. Back at Exeter and over 3 miles again, I think he will run his race. Harry Cobden, he's lost his claim. Lost his claim a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah,
he's very good value. He was very good value for it. He's a very good jockey. He rode a tremendous race to win the Veterans Chase at Newbury at the weekend.
Yeah,
a real talent, Harry, and he'll get the best out of Quinto, who needs driving, but Harry clearly knows him well now. Bryony Frost, Jimmy's daughter, used to ride this filler, but I think for all Bryony's a talent, she's a good jockey. Quinto's very much a man's ride.
Okay,
and I think Harry will get the best out of him.
We will stay jumping at Newcastle, then we'll go to Suddle. Newcastle for the 3:40 handicap chase over 2.5 miles. Just the four runners here. Two Smoking Barrels has had a fantastic season. Has the handicapper caught up with him?
Probably,
but it's
is
quite
the answer
difficult
to, that.
To establish that in a race like
yeah,
this.
Yeah, that's the thing. This is not a handicapping race.
No,
in a manner of speaking. The bottom line is that Caroline, which is by Marteline, so I'm going to call her Caroline, is the best handicapped in the race, and she's her second in Newcastle last time. That's probably good enough to win this. The question with Caroline is, given that she's coming from the Mickey Hammond yard, who just cannot buy a winner. Is she going to be able to reproduce the form? And I think the market will decide that she won't. The market will almost certainly favour Two Smoking Barrels, who can be excused that modest run at Catterick last time out, because she's normally a very good jumper. She made quite a bad early mistake, and that put her on the back foot. She's never really getting back into the race from there. It was one that was won by Act and Pieces. So I think everyone will be happy to forgive her that and expect her to get back on track. And I think she is the likeliest winner on paper. But I wonder to what degree Caroline will be given away in the market. Because Mickey has struggled to have winners for quite a while. There was the hint of a return to form around the turn of the year, but they've gone cold again. But the bottom line is she's actually running perfectly well in the middle of this cold spell. She's probably very well handicapped that she's back to the form she showed last season, and she's only six. So the handicap has given her a real chance. She was second off 1.17 last time out. She's off the same mark again. I think she probably only has to run to that to win this.
Yeah.
The question is, if there was nothing wrong with her last time, why would there be anything wrong with her today? So
yeah.
I think she'll go second favourite. I think she's got
the
same chance.
I think quite well fancied last week as well.
Yeah, well, she won off a reasonable enough price, 10 to 1 in a small field. She shaped really well that day. And I think she'll take the beating. If she was odds on favourite, I wouldn't want to touch her because of the stable form. I think she ends up drifting in the market, and they send Two Smoking Barrels off very short.
Okay.
And Caroline, as a result, might end up being the value.
And interestingly, question mark, whether people find it interesting or not, Caroline and Martelou, of course, both.
Both by the same stallion, yeah.
Martelou. Right, final race we're going to look at is at Suddle. It's at 3 o'clock and it's a stayers handicap over 1.6 miles on the fibre sands. There's a few old favourites in here, the likes of Katie Gale and Sam Tu and Noguchi. But there's also a few potential improvers, some younger horses. This doesn't look all that easy. Sometimes these races you can narrow down to two or three. There's a few that could just be flies in the ointment here.
Yes. Yeah, this is actually a tough race. Mm. And it's not even easy to work out how it's going to be run.
No.
Because plenty of these can go from the front. And that's one of the obvious things. You've got potential front runners in from the top. Katie Gale, Sam Tu, Urato, Spirit of Tom and Tool, Pinwood, Noguchi, Tempuran. The entire field have made the running on one of their most recent starts. So you could have them all trying to get to the front, which would turn it into absolute slog, I suppose. But I suspect that one or two will take back as a result of that. Katie Gale may be the obvious one, but Sam Tu comes from a yard that can get their horses fit after a break.
Yeah.
Marjorie Five, her reputation is growing all the time. He won this race a couple of years ago when he was with Brian Ellison. And I thought it was very interesting that he was using this race on his comeback. I don't think he'll lack for fitness. He can lead. He doesn't have to. And I think he might end up being the value in the race. I suspect Katie Gale might be favourite.
Uh-huh.
But Sam Tu strikes me as being the likeliest winner.
Okay, Sam Tu then. Worth a look in that Suddle 3 o'clock. Great stuff, Rory. Been great chatting to you for almost 40 minutes.
Yeah.
This might be the longest racing podcast ever. And on a Monday as well.
I know.
Anyway, thank you very much for joining me.
My pleasure.
We'll catch up with you soon.
See you then.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.